This is In Discussion, brought to you by Defence Media.
Hi everyone, thanks for downloading this week's episode of Defence Media's In Discussion, a podcast for marketing and communications professionals in the aerospace and defence industry. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe and also follow us over on LinkedIn where you'll find other content such as blogs and video. Hello and welcome to Defence Media's first In Discussion podcast. Thank you for joining us for the first episode. You might have seen some In Discussion videos already on YouTube, but this is going to be a podcast dedicated to basically marketing and communications in the aerospace and defence sector. If you don't know me already, my name is Grant Turnbull. I'm the Digital Content Director at Defence Media. You might notice that we've got basically a little bit of a new format going on here. We've got a little podcast and video studio set up in the Defence Media office. And for the first time, we're joined by my colleague and co-founder of Defence Media, Beth Stevenson. Welcome to the podcast, Beth.
Thank you.
So you're the editorial content director, aren't you, at Defence Media?
I am.
What does that entail?
So I take the lead on all of our editorial projects, whether that's copywriting, blog writing, white paper writing, anything. Mm. Anything with the written word.
Anything with words.
Anything with words.
No, good stuff. You might have seen previous In Discussions, we've been speaking to experts in marketing and communications, really trying to delve into a little bit more on what's happening in defence and aerospace right now, particularly in terms of COVID, etc. So for this podcast, for this episode, we're going to be looking at virtual events. And we thought that we'd look at virtual events because the last 4 months we've been kind of in lockdown and we haven't really had the chance to go to events. They've obviously all been cancelled because of travel restrictions, etc. So, and it's only in the last couple of weeks that we've actually seen several quite high profile events. So Farnborough, REACT, ELA, there was the Air Power Conference as well that just preceded REACT and Farnborough. And they've kind of all given us this digital experience going virtual instead of us obviously being able to attend in person. Mm-hmm. So we've had some time to digest some of those virtual events. Mm-hmm. You've been watching some of the new, we're basically watching Farnborough.
You were watching a lot of REACT.
I was watching more of the REACT. But yeah, you were watching what they basically called FIA Connect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you wrote a blog looking at some of the trends. But now we're going to kind of delve into the virtual events themselves and whether they worked, you know, what was good about them, but also kind of what didn't work. And yeah, I think we've kind of got a lot to digest. Because some stuff was quite good, but again, some stuff wasn't. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, obviously it's kind of just something that everyone's struggling with at the minute in terms of the events calendar has come to a standstill. Yeah. It was obviously a part of everyone who's in aerospace and defence most likely went to some kind of trade show in the year. And so now we can't do that. And I think everyone's struggling in that respect. But yeah, we thought we'd start with the pros, mm-hmm, of a virtual event. So when you were watching Farnborough Connect, FIA Connect, mm-hmm, what did you kind of see as some of the pros there?
I think the scope of sessions that could be accessed probably gives access to smaller players that might not necessarily get much exposure at a show like Farnborough. There were lots of common themes as well, so it kind of seemed like everybody was on the same agenda in that regard. And also then, you know, with that sort of format, you can kind of log in as and when you choose to whatever sessions you want to participate in, rather than just enduring, for want of a better word, everything that's put in front of you.
I think it was better to get a more kind of top level understanding of what the big issues are at the moment. Mm-hmm.
And there are some clear issues. Obviously COVID-19 is a significant one, but also just in the industry generally, that I think would have been common themes of the show if it were a live event. Mm-hmm. You know, if COVID didn't happen, but might not have been as apparent at such a large show where there's so much going on.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. we've said before that obviously Farnborough, it's not really a conference, is it?
No.
I mean, there are conference elements there, but it's all about the big deals. It's all about the big stands.
Yeah,
it's all about chalets.
How many
aircraft, flying displays.
Yeah, how many aircraft Boeing and Airbus are selling.
Yeah,
and
exactly. So
what attends?
It's a slight detour from what Farnborough's normally about.
Well, yeah, it's transitioned from an air show and a sort of announcement show to a conference.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, there wasn't much of an alternative. If Farnborough was still going to happen in a virtual format, I think this is the only sort of format that it could have taken place in.
Yeah, of course. One of my kind of positives for these virtual events, you know, whether it's Farnborough, whether it's RIAT or the Air Power Conference, is that they are free to attend.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's been really good for the industry, that a lot of these events now, you can just sign up and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's it really. That's all you need to give your details and you'll be able to access all the discussion, everything that's going on. And it's these shows that would normally maybe thousands of pounds to attend.
Yeah.
You know, as an industry delegate, that costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So for the fact that you can just go there for free now, it is will be really good for a lot of companies, particularly aerospace companies that are struggling at the minute, and particularly small SMEs or maybe, you know, second tier companies. And they're not obviously just saving money on the registration costs, they're saving money on the booths, the travel, the accommodation. And that's really important. That must be thousands of pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not going to go unrecognized.
No.
Especially next year when planning, there's going to be a lot of planning for what happens or what comes next for exhibitions.
And I think there was a lot of discussion pre-COVID about attendance at air shows, and lots of companies were scaling back anyway. So I feel this is almost accelerated decision-making for some companies in
absolutely
how much they commit to their attendance at these shows.
Yeah, I mean, and companies attending shows is and the politics behind that is nothing new. I mean, we've seen companies pull out of Farnborough before. We've seen companies pull out of Paris Air Show before and other shows. And it will be an inflection point where they actually have to ask themselves, is it worth spending this much money, sending this many people here? Because I think for some companies, the old school thinking was, we need the biggest show at the exhibition. That's what will set us apart from
the biggest presence,
the biggest stand, effectively. And I think that's what they thought set them apart from their competitors. Whereas I think that mindset might change now in the future.
More quality over quantity, perhaps.
Exactly. Just kind of going back to the something like Farnborough and the actual content that was there. Like for me, I think as kind of an industry person that wants to learn more about what's happening right now, for me, the best content was probably the panel discussions, which clearly had a lot of people involved. I mean, they had a big CEO panel discussion, which you rarely get, really. All the CEOs of all the aerospace companies and some defense companies.
Scheduling means that you can't usually get them in the room at the same time.
Exactly, because they're probably signing a multi-billion.
Yeah, they've got to be the other side of an air show.
Deal.
Yeah, if they're at the show at all.
So that was great. You know, that's really good. And yeah, I think more of that going forward as part of virtual events should be a number one priority.
Yeah. Yeah, those sorts of sessions, I think, were opposed to the sales pitch type presentations, which, I mean, there were still examples of those as well. A bit more one-dimensional, less engaging, probably had less value. But again, for smaller companies, it's a way of getting some exposure.
Yeah.
It's such a large show where usually they would be kind of lost in the crowd.
Yeah. And it was a lot. Farnborough just basically, I think it was over 100 kind of either panel discussions or webinars, seminars, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, that I would say that's maybe too much, but we'll likely discuss that a little bit more in this podcast. Like something for me as well with a virtual event, and now we're not kind of just discussing virtual events as in the Farnborough or anything that's linked to an actual show. I think a lot of companies now want to do a virtual event which normally revolves around like a virtual stand. I think they are good from a PR perspective. You can actually anchor a date, and you can anchor news onto that week, and you can say, this is what we're going to announce this week. And so you're effectively replicating the event that should have been, and you're saying, okay, because it's this date, we will announce this. And then you normally get the trade press or even national press to pick up on that. And so I think that's good in that, from that perspective. I think it builds that kind of excitement for a set date in the calendar. So I think that that's good. Whether that is the most important thing, that's another question. But I think what a lot of companies have been able to do with Farnborough particularly, and maybe what the RAF was able to do with like the Air Power Conference, they had set dates that they knew they were going to announce things, yeah. Which is good. And obviously then it's pinned onto a particular event.
Yeah.
And it's an old school
PR
way mm-hmm. of working, but it does work. And there was lots of press coverage for certain elements of Farnborough. And certain elements of the Air Power Conference in terms of Tempest, etc.
And our industry can be a bit chaotic, so giving people a time and a virtual place to be, I think probably has its merit for some people.
Yeah, particularly like trade press.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to give them a week where they're going to get lots of stories.
Yeah,
is probably good.
Yeah, but even like during a live event, you still need set times for announcements and briefings, and usually trade press appreciate that because they know where to be at a particular time. So kind of replicating that in a virtual form, I think probably at least mimics the live event to a certain degree.
I suppose this is another positive of a virtual event, just for the journalists, and also also for the the business people that go there.
Yeah, the stakeholders are involved.
If they've got meetings in various places, that's tiring. An exhibition or a conference, they can be tiring. It's a lot to do. Obviously, like from our backgrounds as journalists, they were always the kind of the toughest weeks.
Yeah. From a scheduling perspective, having everything in one pot and then planned out is far more organised than trying to be this end of the airfield for one press briefing and then somehow you've got to be the complete other end 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
And then back again.
Yeah.
So at least it was almost like everything was taken in and scheduled, assuming that people were announcing through the main FIA Connect format rather than through their own channels.
Yeah.
So there was that benefit that you could actually see everything that was going on almost in one place and decide what you wanted to tune into.
Yeah, I think a lot of journalists, looking from like almost like a PR side of things, a lot of journalists would probably appreciating the virtual element at the minute.
Yeah.
Because cost is a big thing at the minute.
For everybody.
For everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that you're not paying for flights and you're not paying for a hotel to go to these events is a huge bonus at the minute.
It doesn't just cost to, exhibit and, pay for tickets and so on. It's all of the logistics surrounding it. You're paying because people are taking out the office for a week at a time and they're not doing their day-to-day job. Yeah, it's time-consuming and monetary-consuming.
Yeah. I think it's a relief for a lot of people that these events are virtual.
Especially obviously with what's going on. But also I think anyway, because the industry, I think budgets are an issue even prior to what's happened with COVID.
Yeah. And it also means that people can dip in and out. They can go for a cup of tea. They can do.
Or they can also do other meetings in between.
Yeah. Or they can just do their general day to day.
Yeah.
Which
and I then think log just, in for whatever whatever presentation takes their interest and what benefits them, and then go back to doing their day to day job rather than having to take a week out of their normal working life to attend an event. Going to a conference, for example, not everything is going to be relevant to you, but you have to endure it to almost kind of justify the cost of attending. For a lot of people, it costs a lot of money to attend a conference.
Exactly, yeah. Just before we start, kind of, these are all kind of positives that we're seeing at the minute. Okay. And I just wanted to kind of mention Riyadh, virtual Riyadh.
That was your favourite.
That was, I'm
not biased.
I'm a big aviation nerd. I am a self-confessed av geek, and I just thought it was very well done. I think that it's clearly a challenging time for Riyadh as well, because obviously most of their proceeds from that show go to charity, mm-hmm. and so they're not going to be able to make such a large donation this year. So that's an issue, but they've still recognised that there's aviation enthusiasts out there that will welcome like some kind of virtual event.
Yeah.
So they put on, I would say they put on a really good event.
But ultimately at the end of the day, Riyadh is an air show and people want to see aircraft flying.
That's true.
But I mean, given the circumstances, it was a great alternative and they did the best with what they were permitted to do. So, but I mean, going forward, I doubt very much that will be a format that they will continue with, because as much as Riyadh has kind of transitioned slightly to a business show, it's still an enthusiast show. Mm. People still want to see the flying displays.
Absolutely. Yeah. And obviously that now, I suppose, brings us into the kind of the negative, the cons of virtual events. And unfortunately, there are a lot of them at the minute, and I don't assign any blame to anyone for it. I think people are trying to adapt to a very difficult situation, mm-hmm. and they're being kind of forced into situations that we're just not planning for.
No.
They're trying to make the best use of technology when sometimes a technological solution just doesn't exist for some of these things, and that unfortunately that's just what we're in at the minute, and it's a huge learning process for a lot of people, and they're kind of being forced into particularly going digital. And especially our industry, aerospace and defense, is probably not the most forward thinking when it comes to kind of digital and utilizing digital and virtual channels. So it has been almost a kick up the backside for a lot of these people. But again, as I say, and I want to stress that, everyone's going through a very challenging time at the minute. And I think people are genuinely trying to do their best. For me, particularly, I think at the minute, is that events are about relationship building. I think fundamentally, it's about showing your face and, whatever role you're in, for me in the past, and for you as well, as journalists, it was kind of reputation building for us as journalists, because we wanted to show people that we were there, we were, representing a certain publication, we were an expert in a certain field, and we wanted to build that relationship with either, a procurement official or a military officer or someone in a company. And the more times you saw that person, the more times you could interact, the better the relationship mm-hmm. got, and the more they could trust you to give you information, etc. And I think that's fundamental, mm-hmm. and it's always good to go to an event and see people and, catch up with them, build new relationships, just talk. Oftentimes you're not even talking about work. You're talking about other things. You're mm-hmm. just talking about being at the show in a certain country. And it's those relationships that are slowly built over time that you're not getting with a virtual event.
No.
And I think that's fundamentally where potentially the biggest gap is at the minute for a virtual event.
It's almost like chance encounters a bit more at a show, rather than scheduling in this half an hour because we want to talk about this one thing. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, showing your face, what's going on,
that could be,
picking up on things.
At a bar at the end of the day or what have you, or in the hotel or what have you. You know,
It's a small industry at the end, surrounding these shows.
No, exactly. So, I think, for me at least, I think the biggest replacement for that has been LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
I just think LinkedIn is just designed for people to connect
mm-hmm.
and to share ideas, much in the same way as you would, at an event when you meet someone. And that's, for me personally, that's kind of like what I'm channeling that into at the minute, is LinkedIn. But other people might have other ways to do it. They might just pick up a phone. Fundamentally, that could just be the alternative.
Still exists.
Phones still exist. Thing. And you don't have to do it with you don't have to do a Zoom call or anything like that.
No.
Email still exists. You can still email people. But I think, I think it's that exchanging of ideas. And as well, you have a lot of people, the same like-minded people in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is also, so valuable,
mm-hmm.
so valuable. And it's so valuable just for salespeople in various companies.
I also think, kind of leading on from that, some of the feedback from these virtual events has been that they are very one-dimensional. They're very somebody talking at them. There either isn't a Q&A or there's a limited amount of Q&A at the end. So it's far more like a sales pitch, which doesn't have to be held during an event. There's nothing hinging it on that event. It just happens to be through the format of a show that's going on that week. So I think that's one, that lack of engagement. I mean, especially in our formalised as journalists, that would be something that would be quite frustrating and missing that opportunity to, you know, grab an industry official at the end of a briefing or grab a minister and just be able to ask that one question that would probably...
Not physically.
You can't anymore.
No, I completely agree. And we obviously still have a lot of friends in the trade press.
Yeah.
And I think, one of the biggest criticisms is the fact that they can't... The Q&As are just not really there.
No.
And I think for a lot of journalists, obviously, as well, is they like a scoop. They like an exclusive.
Yeah, they like their own twist on the same,
exactly.
Maybe the same story that everybody's producing, but their own little slant on it, which you get from those engagements. Mm.
And a virtual conference or a virtual briefing is not giving that. And
whether the technology is not there or hasn't been invested in to be able to facilitate it, or it's just a case of managing it or time, whatever the reason, it kind of from what I've heard, it's something that's been missing.
Yeah. But I suppose at the same time, a kind of a virtual press conference is again, it's nothing new.
No.
We've all jumped on a phone call, which is a press conference.
And some of the larger sort of aerospace OEMs kind of did it anyway, ones that were based abroad, so that foreign journalists didn't have to be ferried over, that they could log in from their own countries and then still participate in the same. And they managed to do the Q&A quite effectively. Mm. It's very much a thing and has been for some years. So
I think this is also going to be another mindset for companies, is that they realise that they can do a lot of this virtually.
Yeah.
And I think that things like press trips and things like that will likely be scaled back just because the virtual element is, you know, so it's good and it's a good alternative, but I can understand the frustrations of whether it's trade press or other people that just want more information about something, you know. But again, you know, that might be now that if people do want more information, it goes through the website, it goes through, you know, formal channels. I can understand the frustrations.
Yeah, but I mean, it can very much be a new way of doing press conferences and so on, but it doesn't necessarily have to, like we've been saying, it doesn't necessarily have to be hinged on a particular week at a particular time, like during when a trade show was meant to take place.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can happen. You're probably going to get more engagement if it's on a non-show week because you're not being drowned out by other people's announcements.
Yeah. And I think that really in this area, companies should be doing more kind of virtual product launches and things like that aren't necessarily assigned to a show week.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to launch a product on a random week in September, do it.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that you have the kind of the marketing machine going beforehand.
Yeah.
But get people to come, you know, when you say you want them to come.
Your own messaging, your own launch, your own branding.
And if they can't make that, pre-record it and it's gonna go out afterwards and they're gonna be able to access it afterwards. So
because I think that's one takeaway as well, that if you're going to invest in content generation, even if it's through an event organizer, like for example Farnborough or Riot or so on, invest in your own content generation, and then it isn't the expiry date isn't that week. The problem with launching something, attaching it to a show, is that by the end of the week it's almost expired. It's kind of nobody wants to know it the following Monday. Whereas if you generate your own content organically, you can exploit that content over and over in many different formats. Film a video, you can turn it into a podcast. You can do a blog off the back of it. You can exploit the same. But as soon as you attach a date to it, it almost is its own problem.
Yeah, this brings me to a real pet peeve of mine, and you know, you've heard me.
Pet peeve.
Yeah, just
one of many.
One of many, but the fact that these companies, the event organisers, are putting date limits on virtual content. It just seems a ridiculous decision. And the issue as well is that companies who are doing virtual stands are only doing it to a certain day. That content's going to be there. You've probably paid for the internet storage and the domain, etc. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, leave it there.
That also is kind of follows on from your pet peeve of having to supply your details to be able to access content.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're finding more now that the only people that are really doing that are event organizers, because they need to use all that data to do an after action report and potentially to mine that data for other purposes. You know, and now we basically tell a lot of our clients to not what would be called gating content. Yeah. You don't need to do it. Mm-hmm. It's an old tactic. You know, people will just come to view your content, get the information that they want. If they do want to engage with you further in terms of a sales process, they will get in contact with you. Yeah. And if you've not provided the information that means that they will convert to a sales lead, then you need to start then thinking about your content and what content you're putting out.
Yeah. And obviously we're not privy to the commercial relationship between people that were on the panels and had presentations last week and the organisers. But if you're paying money to attend virtually and then your content is gated as soon as the week's over, but you've put that time into time and or money into doing that presentation, and then no one can access it unless they registered before a particular date. I mean, I would be
I'd be questioning
slightly
that.
Upset about that.
Yeah, I'd certainly be questioning that.
Whereas if you generated the content yourself and it was on your own channels and your own website, it's your choice who can access it at what time. If you're going to, well,
yeah,
if you and just I think, keep it free.
And I think from that perspective as well, it's just get content out there.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing, the old school book, like, sorry, the old school playbook of putting an ebook out or, you know, a lead magnet as such and getting people to sign up for it. It's not really working anymore.
In a world where there's just content everywhere.
Exactly.
Because I mean, if your content is gated or you aren't producing enough content, you're going to be drowned out by your competitors that are producing all this content and they're producing it for, giving it to you for free because they want you to see it.
And we shouldn't forget that it should be educational. People should be learning from that content. You know, if you're always putting content out that's just a sales pitch. And again, it's something that we've seen from the virtual events is that a lot of the time the videos that are put out are pre-recorded messages from, you know, a senior executive that doesn't really add any value.
No.
You know,
and you may as well read it in written format. It may as well be a press release quoting that particular executive.
I do struggle to see the sense of some of the content choices and especially kind of this these gating options that some events companies are doing. I'm sure there's reasons. I'm sure there's commercial reasons that we're not, as you say, we're not privy to. But standard practice these days is just not to do that. It's
no. A few years ago maybe, but now flooded with content.
Unfortunately, what's happening is that people are replicating exactly the real world. So they're saying this is only available for a week. This is a virtual stand, and it's everything apart from that kind of real world engagement.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which I think is wrong, and it kind of brings me to as we kind of start to sum up, we kind of want to give advice to people that are thinking about a virtual event, virtual stand, taking part in a virtual exhibition, kind of what considerations they need to make. I would say at the minute, I would say like a virtual stand, I don't see a big benefit in them. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of companies have done them, but I think that just that straight replication of a stand, I don't think it adds any value. I think most of what's on a virtual stand is just a pre-recorded video and some data sheets. Like I could get that already from a web page.
I understand why people have done it this year because I mean, it's been a very challenging year, and it was almost replacing what would have been a live event. So it was, and I think all things considered, it's been adapted very well for something that wasn't planned for. But I think going forward, I hate to use the word, but if this sort of thing happens again next year, it's not going to be unprecedented anymore. You can plan.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to plan for something as extreme as what's happened this year, because we've been through it and we've kind of adapted and we've done our best. But I think going forward, it would be you've got the foresight to examine where best to spend your money, your time, your resources.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. For me at the minute, we're constantly looking at kind of how to improve that kind of digital experience. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the biggest challenges at the minute, really. Like for me, when it comes to virtual events, some of the best that I've seen are more along the lines of kind of how news broadcasters, how they broadcast from a studio.
Which can include a live stream.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. So I think that replication of kind of a studio, we're doing it on a very small scale here, but I think that the budget that now can go into a studio kind of setting, I don't think it has to be that big, especially when compared with attending a defence exhibition.
Yeah. If you're going to make the decision to transition to controlling more of your messaging yourself and doing a lot more of your content yourself and not just relying on trade shows, that is a small investment that will pay off.
Exactly.
Will pay dividends, you know, ultimately.
If you've got a meeting room in your company office, there's a good chance that you could probably just set it up as a little podcast studio or like a video studio. Like this. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing.
Defence Media HQ.
Exactly. So I would look into how you generate content in a digital capacity. You know, you don't have to, like, I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but you don't have to depend on outside contractors. You know, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
If you do need that help, obviously there's people like us out there that can do it, but you can do it with a very small team, you know.
Because if you're making that decision to save on your budget that you'd usually allocate to shows, that's a lot of budget that you could recruit somebody with.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
To do it in-house.
Add someone to the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's going to have to be, and we're going to talk about this, I think, a lot this year, you know, on this podcast and in our other content that we're kind of producing, how important content is going to be. I think, you know, it's already recognized that you need to be producing a lot of content as a B2B company, B2G, etc. But I just think that the sheer amount, especially when we tell our clients how much they would need to be producing, I think their jaw drops to the floor sometimes. It's going to have to be a lot, and you're going to have to start putting the planning in place to create quite a lot of content.
Yeah. And it has to be a variety of content as well.
Variety of content.
You can't just invest in one type of content, because it's not going to reach everybody, or it's not going to reach all the stakeholders you want to reach.
But I think that's a fundamental way of how you almost... You're not replicating the exhibition experience, but you're almost replacing it. You're not replicating it. You're giving yourself a much bigger digital footprint, and where more people are likely going to be than, you know, a trade show in Paris or a trade show in Bangkok, for instance.
Yeah, the last thing you want to be is being known for a company that just floods the market with press releases for 1 week a year, and then you don't hear from them for the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. That's no digital presence.
There are companies like that.
Yeah, of course.
They flood you with information for 1 week and then radio silence the rest of the year.
Yeah, so I think just almost to sum up, I think what we would kind of suggest at the minute is to really start to go into the process of asking yourself, like, why you would be attending a virtual exhibition, or why you would be organising a virtual exhibition. Yeah.
Especially when it's not reactive. So it's reactive at the moment, but going forward, it's not going to be reactive anymore. You can plan, and now is the time to be planning. Mm. People plan their presence at trade shows 2 years in advance, 4 years in advance.
Absolutely.
So now you should definitely be considering your virtual presence.
Yeah, and I think the fundamental question needs to be ROI, return on investment. Mm-hmm. Are you getting the value for money from putting, you know, a video up on another person's website? Sometimes yes, sometimes
perhaps
no.
Yeah.
You really need to go into the data and the analytics and what you're getting from it, you know.
Which, I mean, again, we're not exactly privy to it, but it's uncertain how much of that like an analytics element that you get from third-party hosting.
Mm, exactly.
Rather than controlling it and putting it through your own channels and your own website.
Exactly. And how much... I'd be very intrigued to speak to more people and how these types of events, how they're... what impact they do have on sales, whether they can actually assign any revenue number to them, whether they get any qualified leads and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the questions that need
justifying
to be asked.
The investment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas I think from digital channels, particularly like LinkedIn, there's better attribution elements that you can start to assign. So
and also if it's on LinkedIn, it's usually part of a broader campaign, which you can monitor over time. And as we know, business in our industry is a slow burner. It's not like B2C, it's not as instant. So it's more of that longevity and, you know, campaigning over a long period of time, which obviously you can do on your own channels.
Mm. Yeah, so really ask yourself whether one week of content is a good investment or are you wanting to look at, you know, a wider campaign. I mean, some companies like the big manufacturers, the big OEMs.
They may as well scale up they're already doing
anyway.
They
almost can do that in a way. But
and they won't get drowned out. Their content will be read, seen, heard.
But I think others, and you know, the vast majority of companies, you know, not everyone's, you know, a top tier aerospace and defence player.
No.
I think the vast majority of other companies and their marketing teams and their sales teams need to take a really good look at it.
Yeah.
Again, and as we've shown during this podcast, there's positives and negatives.
Yeah, there's no one answer.
And there's no, you know, correct answer to this. Everyone's still learning, as we said at the beginning, everyone's still learning and trying.
And we're still
to
in the middle of a very sort of confusing time, very challenging time.
Everything's still really uncertain. I mean, the impact of COVID is going to have, you know,
impact for a long time.
A long time. So we'll see. We're going to talk about this subject quite a lot over the next few months.
Be interested to hear if anybody has any feedback.
Yeah. So if you want to get in touch with us, we're on LinkedIn and we're on other social media channels. You can either follow us on our main company page and we'll have details of that. And you can also follow us on our individual LinkedIn profiles as well. Thank you, Beth, for joining
us.
You'll be a regular co-presenter now.
You won't be able to stop me now.
Fantastic. I like the sound of that. But thank you for joining us all.
Yeah,
and we hope you enjoyed the episode. See you next time.